All right, so yeah, welcome to the Circularity Podcast, David Katz of Plastic Bank. We're so grateful to have you here. Where in the world are you?
No, I'm in Vancouver, like the, you know, penthouse of life here next to the ocean and the mountains. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're so buzzing to have you because, as people listening know, we're all about creative, compassionate, collaborative communities and building those. And we're interested in the circular economy and designing out waste. And what you've done is kind of, you know, created value from waste, and you've built community in the process.
Well, I have to stop you there. We didn't create anything. We didn't create value from waste. We just exhibited the value that's already in it. We just looked at it differently. And there's a paradigm inside of that. Because the only reason that it's waste is because we make it, we think it so. So, you know, I use the expression or the conversation, like if every bottle, and I'll use bottle as a metaphor for all plastic, all packaging, everything else. If every bottle was £5, €5, $5, how many would you see in the ocean? Okay, none. How many would you see in the waste bin? How many would you see in the environment? How many would be in the landfill? None. So it's not wasteful. It's us. You see, we don't see the value inside of it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you've done and what you've achieved. So, like, I mean, was there a eureka moment, or is this something that kind of came over time?
Right. Yeah, there was a eureka moment, and it evolved over time because I was looking for a solution. Because, you know, my playground is the ocean. I play with her. I play on her. I am in the ocean, on the ocean, with the ocean. That's my space. It's the ocean's edge, where the you know, the sea meets the shore. It's so touching. And so I'd been looking for a solution, and it was May the 11th, 2013. In Silicon Valley, I was there at an event called Singularity University. I was really looking for a solution. It was the greatest minds, greatest thinkers coming together to solve the world's, you know, grand challenges. Those things that will affect the billions of us on the earth. And I went to go look. And it's true that what you are looking for, or what you think about, is what you see. During a additive manufacturing seminar, this 3D printing seminar, they had this belt that they were exhibiting. It looked like a 70s. It was brown. It was interesting. It was like my, you know, the really first time that I saw something 3D printed. And I was like, oh, powerful. And fantastic, fascinating. And it came from one solid strand of plastic. And then it used a nozzle and a computer to generate this belt. And I asked, well, how much does a belt sell for? They said $80. And then when I asked what the cost of the material was, it was $10. I had this body experience. Because in that very moment, I determined that the only thing that determines the value of plastic is its shape. And so currently, we've been taught that the shape of plastic now is worthless. And so it wasn't about changing the plastic outside. It was inside. You see, it's an inside paradigm. Like much of life, the world, you can't wait for the world to change before you're happy. You change inside, and then the world becomes happy. Yeah. So how do I change the philosophy inside the soul, inside the human, to have it looked at newly? How does it now look like the end of suffering, the end of hunger, the end of inequality? Because that's also worth $5. When I can send my children to school now because they take the plastic from the house and they return it to the school that is also a plastic bank branch, and they deposit the plastic to pay for the tuition, and it makes it easier for every child in the house to go to school, and the child learns that by stewarding the environment, poverty leaves the family, and then the school as well is inspired because more children get to go to school, they're not withdrawn when something happens or there's an illness where they can't make money. That is worth way more than $5. That's priceless. See, when you shift the paradigm inside, the outside changes as well.
And how have you managed to kind of encourage people to sort of shift their mindset and change their internal paradigm?
You can't. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Can't convince you to, tell you to, but I can create the paradigm. And I can show you, and I can invite you and say, hey, look at this. Look at these other people. They're turning plastic into money for themselves. Ooh, maybe you want to try it out. But I can't go into country and say, you should recycle, you should do this, you should do that. That'll never happen.
It's almost like trying to build a renaissance of perception.
Absolutely. To change the way people Thank you for that. Never expressed it that way. Absolutely. It's a renaissance of perception.
Yeah, and that's something I've been really battling with recently, this concept of, like, how do you actually create change? And what you're saying is that you can't.
What you get to do is be change. You know, this is why I'm inspired by the Gandhi quote. I have it behind me, you know, be the change you wish to see in the world. It's not even about the actions of what you're doing. It comes from your being, the being in the world. And when you are being that way, then it invites and creates a space for other people to be in the being of it. It's an esoteric conversation, yet powerful and infinite. It's when you step into a new reality and communicate and invite and create from that reality. And when other people step into that reality, it becomes more real in the world, person by person.
Yeah, I think that really resonates with me, the way you're saying that, because our values that we've got as a circularity are bees. They're the bees. Be a light and lighten when you can. Be excellent to each other. They're all about being something and correct. Taking that on rather than telling people to do
what
something.
To do. Just be that before you start telling everyone to do. Be it. You be it, then I'll look at you with authenticity and then I'll accept your invitation. Amen.
Yeah, I'm just soaking all of this up. This is such a phenomenal, fascinating conversation. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's the passion, the authenticity just comes through.
Sure.
But it's just coming back to this, you know, this thing that you've created. And I know you put me up on that earlier. So, you know, it's not something you've created, but maybe like manifested is a better word.
Yeah, it's who I chose to be. And in my being of the world, then the world changes. This is exactly, I'm only telling you what I've done. And maybe other people have their own journeys to get there. And there's all kinds of different ways to get to wherever you want to get. But this is one way. And this is one way that's been proven to be authentic and powerful. It leads to great global change in the world. And so I invite everyone into this way because the being of it is just so simple. There's so much less to do. And it's so much more powerful. And it invites the rest of the world to participate as well. Because I didn't tell you what to do. You chose to do it. You just saw a new way of thinking too. It's like, oh. And see, you know, once you have a new way of thinking, the whole universe changes. The whole universe changes when you take on a new way of thinking. You've expanded. You're never the same person. You can't go back. Once you know, you can't unknow. You can't go back to being ignorant. That's the beautiful part of it. It's just so inspiring and amazing for everyone, especially for our collector community and the tens of thousands of collectors that have a new way of thinking. Like, oh, hold on a second, plastic is money. Like, what? Hold on. Oh, okay, hold on. Oh, what? So, and then it's unlimited for them because now it's entrepreneurial because it's not a job. It's not like we employ people. It's though the more you want to work, the more you make. It can either be the highest paid hard work or the lowest paid easy work. You want to collect two bottles? Collect two bottles. You want to collect 2,000 bottles? Collect 2,000 bottles. Right? So it's unlimited for people. And then all of a sudden it's money beneath their feet. Like, it's like, oh, hold on a second. Like, I'm stepping over money. Let me get that. Hold on a second. That's my money over there. That's my money over there too. I'm coming.
So you had that like eureka moment and you had that, you know, that change. And then you say it evolved over time. So now you've got like communities all over the world that are, you know, collaborating and making great lives for themselves. How long does something like that take? I mean, what is it, sort of 7-8 years it's been ongoing now?
It took my whole life. It was my whole life. Yeah. Like, isn't it? Didn't we're the summation of every decision, of every experience we've ever had in our entire life. There wasn't one place, even though I was attending an event, but what had to happen for me to be at that event in the beginning? What other resources did I have to grow through? What did I have to persevere in my past to get to that place? What I want to express in that is that no matter what has occurred in your life, it is there for you. It's an instruction, not an obstruction. Everything is an instruction. It's the Marcus Aurelius. It's the obstacle in the path is the path. So everything that I had to overcome, everything that I had to learn through, all of the, you know, just absolute degradation and dysfunction of my childhood, all of those things were all ultimately leading me to this. Now, I've been executing in this more refined for the last 8 years. We're into our 9th year now. And, we started in Haiti, then went to the Philippines and Indonesia and Brazil and Egypt. Now we're doing Thai translation right now, getting ready for our entry into Thailand. Now we're going to Cameroon, third quarter. And then next year it should be Tanzania and Kenya. And maybe we'll revisit Vietnam. We've got some things with a communist government there that we got to figure out. And I just continue persevering. Like, it's, there's no, I operate now. So, you know, also part of my answer would be like, how long has it been? Well, now, it's only been now. Like, I only have now. I've been doing things now. So how am I being in the now? So my being in the now is ultimately what invites everyone into the space. So, and I, you know, it's assured because I live in the knowing of the existence of this and I speak from that space. It's just taking more time for more people to get involved. And the more times that I'm in a conversation like this, whether even one other person may be listening, and the world changes. And even just the two of you, you had a new way of thinking. So there's a new way of thinking with both of you now. So the world just changed. So it's really, it's just beautiful. It's just the being of it.
Yeah, that's really, really, really powerful, because it is that bringing people into the fact that you're present with them and engaging and helping them either change that, not helping them to change, helping them understand how they're changing their viewpoint and giving them almost light on that path.
Yeah, it's more, it's less about, it's more about having them see for themselves that opportunities exist. It's not about giving anyone anything. And that, and that's the powerful part, because then it's, you know, then you have your own transformative learning experience. You know, yeah. We've all had that time when we've learned something that transformed our lives. Like, oh, that may, oh, now I get it. Oh, that's exactly what it is. Like, oh, got it. And then they just formulate the rest of it. Then they become entrepreneurial and then creative. And how do I go from store to store? Or, you know, how do I create a route? Or where do I get more material? They don't have to teach them anything. We try to, of course. There's hygiene and stuff and sanitation and how to collect materials and how to sort. And in Haiti, one of the powerful programs, we have Sephora in Haiti. She's our country manager there. She's such a remarkable woman. Knowing there are collectors, we have a few thousand collectors in Haiti. She recognized that many of the full-time collectors are illiterate. And these are like people, I mean, the country's illiterate anyhow, but these are older people that are, you know, maybe in their 60s or so. And so she's taken it upon herself to create reading classes. So she takes in powerful groups of recyclers and teaches them how to read for the first time in their life. It's so amazing. It's like, it's ridiculous. Like, I can't, it's just so powerful, so beautiful. Like, there's just so much love in it.
Yeah, and that's all that, that's all there is, that's all that matters, just that love. And then everything gets amplified, right?
Exactly. Everyone becomes an amplification. Everyone that knows, everyone that has a new way of thinking in this, is an amplification, multiplication, for sure. It's exponential. That's why I love doing stuff like this.
Literally what was just going through my head then was the word exponential, as you were talking about that, about mm-hmm. the growth and everything, was mm-hmm. it becomes almost like an unstoppable force.
Amen. Let it be. Needs to be. Must be. It's not an option for it to not be. You know, in our exponential models, like we, you know, so schools, like chains of schools, so super powerful, where the family, you know, the plastic bank is the school. Because every small village, no matter where you are in the world, has schools and places of faith. That's the commonality. Yeah, there's going to be grocery stores and stuff, but what's available there are teaching children that they can end poverty. And then we have a program that had me, you know, I was invited to meet the Pope, and because I created a program that's now been endorsed by the Vatican that encourages the parishioner to not just bring tithing on Sunday or their offering on Sunday, but to bring their recycling as tithing, so that even the poorest of the poor have the ability to give, right? And so the church then has this service over the poor, service over creation. It's so aligned with the love of those faiths, right? So that's exponential as well, right?
Yeah, it's not very often that I go speechless, but that's happening tonight. This is such an incredible conversation. And just thank you for doing this with us. It's absolutely so awesome. Kind.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Yeah, you created it. You both created it. Like, we're here, but you created this. I'd be acknowledging you created this. Powerful.
So, like, where in the world are people ready to be shown? What kind of person is ready to be shown this?
Ooh, who's ready to see it? Because not everyone's ready to see it. Public companies are not ready to see it because they're the devil incarnate. you know, traditional capitalism has got to change, like this place where shareholder first, you know, where the fiduciary duty, the duty of the CEO, the legal duty, you know, it's the threat of imprisonment if they don't serve shareholders above all else. What? Are you kidding me? That we're here where we are because of that. You want to trace it back? Do you ultimately want to go upstream to understand exactly why the world is degraded the way it is? It's that. Whereas now we see, you know, a new proliferation of B Corp. Well, B Corp, or the CEO of a B Corp, can now make decisions on behalf of all stakeholders, not just the shareholders. And they can do what's well in the world above of just returning quarterly results. So once we change that, then we have an opportunity to change the world. Those people are not yet ready. There's a lot of people who live in the scarcity mindset that believe that, you know, their money, their attachment to money, or their, you know, their societal position as a result of having money or whatever it may be, will be threatened if they have to give up a little bit of the money. There's lots of people that aren't ready, but I would say that the other 7.85 billion of us are pretty ready, right? And I don't think that any child that marched through the streets against climate change is not ready. I'd say that we're truly powerfully entering the regeneration economy. We're moving away from sustainability and the conversation of, oh, I'll just do less damage this year, is ultimately a greenwashing measure about, you know, cutting costs, and say, oh, look, we happen to cut greenhouse gas emissions because we saved money somewhere else. Well, what we're looking for today and what the next generation is looking for are those corporations who are going to exhibit the repair of the damage that's been done. It's the regeneration economy, and those companies who are going to exhibit that they're repairing more damage than their competitors are going to win. And there's going to be a race to exhibit how much damage you've repaired. That's what's unfolding. And so when people use social plastic, when they use the material that we collect, and they use that in their packaging, that is one great way of exhibiting the damage you fixed.
Yeah, it's certainly something. I'll be looking more into what we can do locally.
Want to do something local? You want everyone want to do something local? If you're listening to this, you know, ultimately what I need you to do, what the world needs you to do, is go into a retailer, go into your Sainsbury's, your, I don't know, go wherever and go ask for the store manager. This is really bold. I challenge you with this. Go up to the store manager and say, oh, Mr. Manager, I've been a customer here regularly. Would you please point out all the products in your store that have recycled content in them? Because those are the ones I want to buy. Could you please show me those that are making a repair in the earth? Can you show me those that are actually doing well for society? Because I don't want to buy anything else that's going to kill the planet anymore. I'm done with that. And even if they're look exasperated and go, I don't know if we have any of them. However, there will be, and they will point them out to you. It continues to create the demand for it, because, you know, every time you buy something, you vote. So if you buy stuff that's killing the planet, well, congratulations. So you voted for it. But if you're actually listening and actually want to make change in the world, you're so powerful. Every consumer is so immensely powerful. Like, go into every store, go take a day, go be bold and go and say, yes, I want to do business here, and I'll do business here, because they're the ones that are the customer of the big corporations. It's the retailer that has the power. Now we see like big corporations, or big global retailers, that are now making the decision to delist companies that don't have sustainability in their heart. That's the change. Because the consumer is beating up the retailer, and the retailer has the power now. The retailer has the power. They are the customer of the fast-moving consumer goods companies, and they're making the demand. And every time you go in and you ask for that, you give wind beneath that wing. And that's how change will come about. And that's the way you can support Plastic Bank in the end, because then it creates an additional demand for our material and material of other people and other people trying to do well in the world. It creates the space. And you see, what you did is you didn't even have to demand it. I'm not asking you to go in and say, you need to care. You just ask them, and you see, and you create a paradigm. You create a way of being. You give them a space to go, oh. You give them a transformative learning experience, which is where the world changes. You know, people don't do things for your idea. They do it for their idea. They don't do it for their reasons. They do it for their reasons.
So you're kind of talking about the disruption of a paradigm that's pervaded for far too long. A sort of stick in the spokes of it and a change.
Let's call it a renaissance.
If you look at all the supermarkets, look at what's happened in the UK in the last year or so, last couple of years. Everybody's got sustainability goals. And every supermarket pretty much has taken the plastic off all the produce because that came from
saying, thank the Lord, because it was ridiculous to begin with. Are you kidding me? Please, everybody, come on. Okay, oh, I had to wash my produce at home. Okay.
I'm going to use an example here now. We went to one of our projects is Grow, where we've got some allotments for growing space. So we went to see one of the local spaces that had inspired us, Hannah Fields, in Derby in the UK, in the Midlands. And they were selling some of the produce that they were growing. So somebody went out and picked it there and then and brought it back. Now, that was 2 weeks ago. I've still got that bag of leaves in the fridge.
Yeah.
That bag of leaves is still good to go.
Beautiful.
If I get a bag that's made by one of the bigger corporations and I bring that back and open it, that is not good 2 weeks later,
no.
Regardless of how well they say they can be. So you've got that sustainability there of, do I need a plastic bag of lettuce over here, or do I grow my own or go local to somebody and get it as I need it? So it's,
or just eat it right away so it doesn't go bad. You don't have to worry about it 2 weeks in the fridge. Come on.
No. That.
I would just have salad. Better for everybody anyhow.
Yeah, it's not a full bag still. I've got to say
okay,
that.
Okay, okay, okay.
Yeah, I'm not just left a full bag of salad in there for 2 weeks. There's just some leaves left.
Happens, I don't know.
But it's that connectedness, I think, of all these statuses of being. So it's being mindful of your responsibility to not use too much plastic or to bring that back into the circular event of that, of recycling it or reusing it. But also then, how do I then bring that into, well, if I don't put plastic in there in the first place, then I don't need to worry about taking it out later on and refixing it. So it's almost back to that circular economy sort of vibe of redesigning that first piece of, if I don't put that waste in, I don't need to work that engine.
Don't worry about it. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, we're giant advocates for plastic. In fact, you know, it's a bit, I think, contradictory for some people. Like, what? Oh, I'm a giant advocate for plastic. The material's remarkable and I want to go collect it all. What I'm vehemently opposed to is virgin plastic. It needs to be hung. Or guillotined, I think, in our references to the Renaissance. Did they do that in the Renaissance? I think so. but virgin plastic, like there's 10 trillion kilos of plastic on the earth already. Like all the plastic we've ever produced is almost still here, right? So some incinerated for energy, things like that, or some recycled, but almost all of it's still here, almost 10 trillion kilo. I pushed it up this year because of the personal protective equipment. I think it's pushed us past it. 10 trillion kilos, the world this year produced somewhere between 450 and 500 billion kilos. So we have 20 times the volume of material needed even during a pandemic. 20 times already on the earth, almost infinitely recyclable, but yet we continue to produce more virgin material. Is that not a little bit, is there not something wrong with that? I think so.
It's almost back to that, as you mentioned before, it's back to that model that says, well, it costs me more.
Exactly. 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 You don't think they've known about what's been occurring in the degradation? I mean, when I started, this almost 10 years ago, it was beginning. It was an origin of conversation then. We've brought it forward, more powerfully in the world. But, of course that was with the big, the big organizations in the world. They had all kinds of opportunity over the last 10 years to make change. Have they? No. Of course not. Of course not. There's so much more that could be done. I'm disappointed with some humans, but not all, because most want to do great things in the world. Most are there to serve others. Not everyone is just thinking about their retirement or their mortgage they are, but not like within some of these big companies. They're like, oh, I'm not going to make a critical decision. I don't want to, change virgin plastic production. I don't want to make a big, because that might, interrupt my retirement. What? Okay, got it. Yeah, and I get it. And I get it as well. There's fear and stuff. I get it. Well, let somebody else do it. That's the part of the conversation I have too, is like, everybody says, so someone's got to do something about X. Everyone's got to do something about the ocean. Everyone's got to do something about climate. Everyone's got to do something about malnutrition. Everything's got to do something about, gender inequality. But it's the second conversation, because the first conversation, which we skip by, is that I want to do something about it, but I don't know how. So somebody's got to do it. And you know what? I'm not even willing to task myself to go figure out how. So someone else has got to do something about it. But it still comes, the origin is still rooted inside the soul of the individual who knows that something has to change. They're just afraid.
And you're speaking about fear. That's really jumping out to me right now because, you know, what you're talking about, that fear, it kind of stops progress and growth as an individual, but also like as a community.
It slows the progress of humanity because fear is a past-based, finite condition. So it's based on something that had occurred in your life. So that is something, some event that you then place story and emotion over. It's a very finite. It's not even the reality. It's just the way that you made it mean about you. And so in the universe, in the expansive of the universe, in the infinite universe, if you're picking something finite, you give up all of the infinite. So you give up all of the abundance, all of the growth, all of the greatness of humanity when we live in that fear-based space. But we guide it, I'd say, understand the human condition. What I'm struck with in all of that conversation is how many amazing, life-changing, world-changing, environmental-changing, you know, economic-changing, you know, paradigm-shifting ideas died because the person who had the idea was afraid. I would say far more than what we see in front of us today. Far more. Whatever it might have been took tremendous courage from the individual to bring it to life. So there's that. It's human condition, which I get. And so that's part of this. This is a part of that human condition, creating the space. That's back to the being, the origination of our conversation. How do we create a place of being for people that they get to step into and get to be, you know, and be connected with the infinite? Right?
You've empowered people to become courageous through what you've done.
If that's as a result of me being courageous, that's really beautiful. I'm just my being. I can't make someone courageous, but I am my being. And if you see me being courageous and it creates a space for you to be courageous too, then for me, that's an incredibly rewarding and fulfilling, super fulfilling. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is kind of where we've come from with our meter. We and our, we've got a thing that says together, ordinary people can achieve extraordinary things. And it's about having that courage to just leap off and to try something new and to, you know, take a risk and a gamble.
You know, I'll share this, you know, the origination story. Because when I had the idea of the brown belt, and then, oh my goodness, you know, I had all the hair in the back of my neck. I'm like, oh, plastic is money. The poor don't throw money away. Use it as money for the world. What could that look like? How do we reveal the value in the material more inherently? Oh my goodness, I had all these loud thoughts in my head, like, oh, is this something that's possible? I could, this could be it. And I mean, it could be part of the solution, but it's a solution. And then I jumped to the ego mind. The ego mind was also just louder because of course the first ideas of everything else was happening and visions of working in areas, all the rest of it. And the ego mind showed up like, what? Like, hold on a second. You're going to work in the most violent communities in the world, the most illiterate communities in the world. You're going to try to build a supply chain where there's no roads. You're going to do all these things. Like, who are you? You're going to try to sell the material to the biggest companies in the world. You're going to build all these things. You're going to build a banking application, technology, all those things. What? Are you kidding? You can't do that at all. Which is where I attest that the birth of the plastic bank came in the third thought. And it was quiet. It was a peaceful, you know, powerful, beautiful third thought. And it just simply said, David, you don't need to be the person that could change the world at all. The only thing you need to do is choose to slowly, slowly become the person who could. And it created the space for me. I said, yeah, I could do that. I don't need to be the person that could get this done. I don't have that skill set right now, but could I learn that? Could I figure it out? Could I begin today with what I have, where I am, to make change in the world? Sure, of course I can. And then I just started. Like, okay, I'll figure this little step out. Okay, I need a name. I need our core values. I need this. I need that. How do we bring this to the world? Oh, we'll create a Facebook petition. We'll do more things. We'll continue to grow. Great. And I'll overcome that. And then I'll overcome that. And I'll overcome that. And I'll get feedback from people. And I'll continue to learn. I'll take their feedback as my instruction, not as my obstruction. And every time I communicate it with someone, I get some feedback. And I go, oh, that's an instruction for me. Thank you. oh, you don't think this will ever come to life? Thank you very much. That's an instruction. And on and on. Hello, young lady. How are you?
Yes.
Good. How old are you?
I'm 8 now.
8? Oh, it's amazing. 8. Oh, 8. It's so much fun. That's beautiful. I want to ask you a question. If you were going to solve a problem in the world, what problem would you want to solve? It's a big question, I know.
I don't know.
You know, because people are going to sometimes ask you and say, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? What are you going to do? But I think it's really powerful to ask yourself, well, what problem do I want to solve? How big could I be in the world? What kind of great change could I make in the world? So I just wanted to leave that with you, because I think that you're probably going to be an amazing young human and you can make all kinds of great change in the world. So I think it's just a good idea to think about. That's all. And I'm David from Vancouver. It's very nice to meet you. What's your name?
My name is Nancy.
Nancy. Nice to meet you, Nancy. Nice to meet you. We'll speak to you again, okay? I'll talk to your dad again. Bye. I asked her what problem she wanted to solve in the world. I think it's a more powerful question than what do you want to do? What career do you want to have in the world? Who do you want to be in the world? What problem do you want to solve in the world? And I think the sooner we feed them with that and seed them with that, the more that they can look at their schooling and everything else that they don't want to do as an instruction to get them to being a great world leader.
And knowing Nancy, she's absolutely got those chops.
It's awesome. Totally. Right? So it's just a beautiful question. Like, Nancy, what problem do you want to solve in the world? And she'll think about it for a while. She's going to come back one time and say, oh, you know, those poor people on the road, the people who have homes or whatever it is, they should have homes. That's beautiful. So when you're taking your math class, you know that when you're learning that, that's going to help you learn how to make sure people have homes. That's why you're learning what you're learning. I think it makes it easier for this, for the child.
And like, do you think we ask that question if as adults?
Not at all. Not at all. See, it's a question about who is your being? What is your energy in the world? Who are you as a co-creator?
What a lot of people have, I think, been able to open their eyes to in the last year with everything being locked down, mm-hmm. has made a lot more people reevaluate is not just about why am I doing this? What am I wanting to be? Where do I want to be? What more than how's my career going to evolve? How's this going to go? How's my job going to be? They've started to then become more self-centered. Sounds bad, but it's not. It's the right way of talking about it. It's becoming self-centered is to understand how they become.
Sure. Where's my joy? What's happening in life? Where do I find fulfillment from? All those things. No question. Instead of serving the other, serving someone else that dictates to your life when you're allowed to be happy. Here's take 2 weeks away from your service to me. What? Are you kidding me? Stop that. What a loss of opportunity in the world. Comprehensively. Because the world needs you to be in your authenticity. The world needs you to be in your power and your inspiration. That's what the world needs. The world needs you to show up.
We almost spend a lot of children's childhoods teaching them to be conformist rather than be themselves.
The education system as well. Do it this way. You'll be reprimanded if you don't do it my way. Now, because you didn't do it my way, I'll make you wrong and bad for doing it not my way. You were an individual, but that was wrong, so now you'll be punished for being an individual. And then I'll punish you in front of your peers to make you look bad to other people, so you'll further melt, you'll further dissolve. What a loss.
So what we're saying intrinsically is like the way you change the world. It's by empowering people with hope rather than kind of giving them fear.
Then they see it. Then it's available for them. And then once it's available for them, then they can make it available for other people. You see, the whole premise, the difference, you know, people, you know, call before me is like, well, why are you a for-profit business instead of a charity? Like, why? Why would I be a charity? You can't donate the end of poverty. Charity? What? Ridiculous. Oh, but you're doing such good in the world. Ah, okay, I see. So you're conflicted because doing well in the world doesn't equate for business to you. So you don't see business doing well in the world. Well, we do. We see that the purpose of business in the world is to do well in the world. And we need to invite and enliven other people to be in that same paradigm as well. So here's the kind of the difference that I use. A charity is already on their knees, like inherently, and I use this metaphor, like the charity's on their knees, always with their hands out as well. Like they're always begging for money. It's a charity. So they themselves are beggars. So how can a beggar on their knees take someone who's beside them that's on their back and lift them onto their feet? You can't. You need to be on your feet to lift others to their feet. You can try from kneeling or sitting on the ground to help push someone, but if they're heavy and they don't have the power, then of course they won't be on their feet. They'll maybe go from their back to be on their knees beside you, which is what happens with so many charities in the world. Or you can powerfully be on your feet, standing strong, fast, and invite others and take them by the hand and pull them onto their feet. But now you leash an army, because now there's two of you on your feet and you can both pull people up onto their feet. And then there's four, and then there's eight and 16. And you continue to lift people and put them on their feet, and then the world changes. And it starts by lifting one person and putting them in there on their feet. Go be the change you want to see in the world. So really beautiful. Thank you for having me on your podcast. I think it's really remarkable. You're both good, gentle souls. So it was a real pleasure.